He who cannot dance blames the DJ.
Now, many of you during Elizman, you looked, you had that look of like a deer caught in the headlights. Some of you led a dog's life during Elizman. But I'm going to let the cat out of the bag that there is a... There's an elephant in the room here. But I don't like cliches. And this is serious business. We have a theme here. Every month we have a theme in the yeshiva, and a lot of the schmoozes that go on during Tuesdays, some of the pre-shear stuff that you do in each individual shear, is supposed to reflect around that particular theme. And I'm sure you're all familiar already with the theme of this month of Cheshvan is, you all heard it this morning, I guess, Bishvili Nivra Olam. The world was created for me. And I'm going to get to that. But before I do so, I really want to... There was an idea that I kept on coming across over Sukkot's vacation. I had a chance a little bit to learn a little bit. Look at some swarm you don't always get to look at during the course of the normal Zman. And there's an idea that came across four different times, four different sources that kept on saying the same thing, and I got that feeling that maybe someone is trying to tell me that I should say this over. So the first place, or one of the places that I saw it, is actually a shout out to Zev Lindenbaum, his great grandfather, Rav Amiel, Rav Moshe Avigdor Amiel, was an amazing Talmud Chacham who was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. He was elected in 1930 to be chief rabbi. He actually beat out Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, a man whose picture is in the lobby, Rav Soloveitchik from Yeshiva University. He lost out in this election through Rav Amiel in 1930. So you can thank Rav Amiel for probably Yeshiva University's success. He put out a number of sfarim. So one of the sfarim that he has is called Hegyonot El Ami. And he raises the following question. What is the default state of man? Okay, this is a default state. This is something that you guys are familiar with, this term. It's not something that I grew up with, or maybe Rabbi David didn't grow up with such a term. What is the default state of man? Is it a state of happiness? Is that really the natural state, man to be happy? And it's just that external factors cause man to be unhappy and sometimes depressed or sad. Or is it really that man naturally is in a state of melancholy and he needs to sort of force himself, or with the help of some external activity, to reach a state of simcha in his life? That was the question that he posed. Now, the answer to this question, again, there are four different sources that dealt with this. If you want the sources inside, I'll have to give it to you after the shmooze. But basically, quoting Rav Amiel, Rav Nachman of Breslov, the Talna Rebbe, and the last source is Rav Kook in Orot HaTshuva. And the answer to this question actually is very, very important, because I believe it's the key to solving a lot of other difficulties that maybe some of us may be experiencing, or have experienced, or will experience. For example, one of the questions, or maybe something maybe of concern to you, or something you like to pursue, is how can I like to learn more? How can I get to a stage where I actually like to learn? Or why is davening such a burden to me? What will it take for me to get out of bed in the morning, come to mincha, actually show up for Maariv, but most importantly, to actually engage in a relationship with Hashem. So here's the insight, the way Rav Nachman said it over. Or the way they say over in his name.
Yosef HaTzadik. He is one of the few that actually gets that name, Tzadik. Noach was also given that name. Yosef HaTzadik. Why is he called Tzadik as opposed to the other Avos? We had seven guests that came to our sukkah. Of all the seven, only Yosef is called Yosef HaTzadik. What's the great tzitzkus of Yosef? So Chazal tell us that the main reason is because of his ability, unbelievably, to withstand the temptation of Eishes Potiphar. Here he is, 17, 18 year old guy, very good looking, strapping, handsome young man, and he has this married, beautiful woman who wants him. And he's able at the last moment, the last moment, possible moment, he's able to pull himself away and say no. Rav Nachman says there's another reason why he's called a tzaddik. And that is because after Yaakov Avinu dies, and now it's his chance to get revenge on his brother. When was the last time you let your brother have the last hit? You're not gonna, Joe. When was the last time you let your brother hit you last? And then, all right, we'll stop it here. Ever? What brother would let his brother take advantage of him? And here the brother sold him into slavery. Sold him to slavery. Left him for dead. Now Yaakov's out of the picture. Now is his chance to take revenge, and his brothers are expecting it. Right? You read in Parshas Vayechi, they're expecting it. And they come to him begging him, please, please have mercy on us. And he says, no, I have nothing against you. Atachas Elokim, I have nothing. I bear no grudges against you. Rav Nachman says, that's unbelievable tzitzkus. Chazal tell us that tzitzkus is for holding back from Potiphar. Not for that. Although yes, it's great, it's awesome, but is that why he's called a tzaddik? So Rav Nachman explains, you see, it's only because Yosef didn't sin with Eishes Potiphar that he was able to bear no grudge against his brothers. An unbelievable insight of Nachman says. See, had Yosef sinned with Eishes Potiphar, had he done what perhaps is the more natural thing to do for a person that age, in that situation, his brothers left him for dead, his father thinks he's dead, he's totally cut off, his woman wants him. Had he failed at that moment, says Rabbi Nachman, there's no way he would not have taken revenge on his brothers. You know why? Because he would have been so down on himself, so angry, his neshama would have been so much pain for what he would have done. That is the source of a person's anger. And where should he really direct that anger? Himself. But you see, the way we work is that we don't like to get angry with ourselves. We don't point fingers at ourselves. It's very, very uncomfortable. So what would he have done? He would have blamed his brothers. It's your fault! You guys threw me into the pit! You sold me into slavery! You destroyed me! He would have been so angry. He would have been filled with rage. And he would have taken it out on his brothers. That's the way we work. That's the way our psyche works. You ever wonder why teenagers have like this look on their face? know, like, you know, don't look at me, don't even smile at me. Not everybody, but there's some people like this. Maybe you know some. See, it would have been wrong for Yosef to point his fingers at his brother. It would have been wrong. It's incorrect. It was, yes, you were put in a very difficult situation, and yes, it's true that if it wasn't for them, you wouldn't have been put in that situation. However, as we know, Monday morning quarterbacks, we know, because he did it, he was able to pass the test. Yosef had that ability to overcome that unbelievable Yitzhar. He had it was all up to him. And it would be wrong if he hadn't failed to blame his brothers, because he could have passed that test. Now, in life, often people come across difficult tests. And sometimes they don't pass them. Not because they couldn't. It's because ultimately they chose not to. They chose the wrong path. And inside, in their emes, bigger part of who they are, the neshama, is very upset with themselves. The neshama is suffering. They're in a state of turmoil. And so they're angry. But so often, or more often than not, they take out their anger on those who care about them the most. They'll take out their anger on their parents, on their siblings, on their rebbeim. But the fault state of a person, says Rav Amiel and all the others, the natural state of a person is actually to be v'simcha. It's those failings that bring us to that state of turmoil. It's those outside factors. When we chose wrongly, or we gave in to a taiva, that creates that state of sadness or melancholy or anger. We were given a neshama. That's the essence of who we are. It wants nothing more than to draw close to Hashem. And the soul is content and happy. But when we run after Ta'avot, then the Neshama is frustrated. And he takes it out on everyone else but himself. And what bothers him, those people who are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing. Because it reminds him of his own failings. So the people who are into learning, the losers. People who are actually daven and are like excited to daven. Like, what's the matter with that guy? Doesn't have the patience for learning Gemara. Now we're going to talk at later stages about why we learn Gemara, and we're going to have different classes about methodology, about how to make Gemara more accessible and exciting. We're going to do all those things. But for most people, and I think the Rebbeim will agree with me, most people, in our experience of teaching here for many years, most people, and this is most kids in high school, the high schools we come from, struggle with Gemara is much deeper than just because it's not as interesting as Tanakh. It goes deeper.
it goes to the core of really the struggles that we go through, our neshama goes through. We see this progression actually in last week's parsha. In the primordial sin, the sin of Adam HaRishon and Chava, what happens there? Pasuk says, Chava sees, she sees the fruit, V'chi ta'ava hi le'inayim. It's an enticement to the eyes. They give in to the taiva. Woman brings man to sin. And then what do? They try to hide from Hashem. They try to cover themselves up with clothes. They can't face up to the source. And then when Hashem points his finger, Kibayacho, what does Adam do? He blames Chava. Chava blames the Nachash. We follow the same pattern. Follow the same pattern. The source of our anger and our lack of patience with things spiritual is really our own sinful behavior, our pursuit of tavot. And those who suffer the most are actually the ones who actually have the biggest neshamas. The ones with the biggest souls, they, the ones who carry this burden, this uncomfortable aspect, in the heaviest way. And then when we fail, and we have pangs of guilt, we try to avoid that encounter with Hashem. We're too embarrassed. He who cannot dance blames the DJ. Perhaps this thinking can explain. Explains why there are those who can't or won't make the effort to get off the bus to Daven Mincha. It's hard to conceive of an easier situation of accessing a minyan than the one we had yesterday. So if you were in high school, you would get in trouble for cutting tefillah or breaking the rules. But it'd be missing the point. Because the question really is why is he dislike davening so much? That it's worth it not to get off the bus, but to break a rule. Why doesn't he run at the opportunity to nourish his soul? Which is what davening is. It's a painful experience to him. So in high school, he may have gotten a detention, but probably would not have endeared him more to tefillah after having served that detention. So what does this mean for us practically? Okay, so let's say the rabbi is right, that he's identified. So what? So now what? What do I do now? So first of all, we have to try and curb our feeding of our tavot. Giving into our lower selves. There are other ways to get pleasure in this world that are totally within halakhic boundaries. So, for example, yesterday we took you to a beautiful separate beach yesterday in Bayah. Now, there are in every city in Israel where it borders to a beach, there is also, besides the non-separate beaches, there's actually every city has a separate beach. There's an alternate days, men and women. There's no shortage of places where you can go without giving into your lower selves. Now's not the time to go into the whole issue of separate swimming and, you know, the fact that it's unquestionably usur. It's not something I have to discuss right now. You can talk about it afterwards in a few months when you're maybe something more ready for it. But I'm just trying to give you an example of, you know, trying to get into the right mindset. That it may be hard for some who maybe during the vacation time, you know, went to those types of places. It may be harder for them, like nervous about getting back into learning. Maybe this could be part of the problem. And now the question is, okay, so I made the mistake, whatever it was, I didn't know, Now what do I do? So let's stop feeding that. Let's stop. Let's try to find, how can I add that same type of experience in a kosher way? So that's really, bottom line, that's really what we try to do on the Tehillim. You had a great time, you didn't have a great time, but we try to show you experiences that you can have a good time in a totally way that's kosher within the frame of our halacha, and almost the same experience. One must try to live his life with more kedusha, practically. You know, there's a famous advice of the Mishnah Berurah when a person, sometimes it happens, you're in the middle of davening and you're trying actually, you really want to try to daven, and then you, all of a sudden you have some crazy thoughts coming to your mind which totally takes you away from what you're doing, davening, standing in front of the Mishnah, in front of the Aron Kodesh. So the advice the Mishnah Berurah writes is that you, at that moment you think of the pasuk, leave tahor barali elokim, Ruach Nachon Chadesh B'Kirbi. Just think about that pasuk, conjuring that pasuk, and it's able to refocus your thoughts. Works. It's an amazing thing. But the words also are very appropriate. Leiv Tahor Baralila. God created me with a pure heart. That's my natural default state. It's pure. There's actually a beautiful niggun. I'm not going to sing it now, but there's a beautiful niggun that goes Leiv Tahor, not the one you all know. There's a niggun that they sing in Yeshivat Merkaz Arav and Yeshivat Har Amor of Leiv Tahor Baruch Li Elokim. It's a faster niggun. And just last night I was watching a video of Hakafa Shneos from a couple of years ago, 2 years ago. They were singing this song for 10 minutes straight, Leiv Tahor Baruch Li Elokim. It was awesome. Thousands of people, Hakafa Shneos in Har Amor. And going around the circle the whole time singing with his fathers was Reb Benny Eisen, whose yahrzeit is tomorrow. Reb Benny Zatzal spoke, if you don't know, he was a Rebbe in Yeshiva, passed away last year. Reb Benny always spoke about trying to increase Kedusha in your life, in one's life. It was Parshas Noach last year. It was the first Shabbos and in Shabbos and Yeshiva. There, on Shabbos, right after Shabbos came in, is when he left this world. And he emphasized this concept of bringing more Kedusha. In fact, the way he described the year in Israel, he called it the year of Kedusha in your lives. This is the year where you focus on Kedusha. That's what this year is. You come to the holiest place of the year, you're studying the Holy Torah, it's to add Kedusha, to add holiness into your life. Now, so number one is seeking out ways to add Kedusha and trying to minimize those things that are the opposite of Kedusha. I live in Beit Shemesh. In Beit Shemesh, there's a Beit Shemesh running club, which usually when I'm coming back from Maariv on a Monday night, or taking my kids somewhere, and you see these guys running for hours. And I'll be honest with you, often when I see them, I feel like, what are these guys wasting their time? And the guys my age, some of them even older, just running, endlessly running around. And I have, a little bit of mezalzel, this whole thing. Even like they won't give up. It's like Yehar Val Yavar, they won't miss a Monday night or a Motzei Shabbos. Even if it's like Erev Yom Kippur, you'll see them running. It's unbelievable. But then I started thinking about it a little more, because I know it may come as a shock to some of you. But I actually, one point in my life, I weighed less than I do now. Shocking. But I look at these guys, and all these guys are in much better shape than me. And honestly, right now I'm very, very sore from the teal. And I'm not afraid to admit either that, after we did the whole descent on the mountain, and then we had to go up. And we're going up this ascension, and I'm not afraid to admit it. It was getting more and more difficult. Breathing was harder, and I really thought for a moment I thought there really is not going to make it. Baruch Hashem is here, and what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say is that, when you the first time you go running for a long distance, so you feel it afterwards. Your breathing is very heavy. You think you're going to die. You think your gut's going to come out. And you're in a lot of pain. You're in pain maybe for a few days afterwards. But then you run again. And maybe it's a little less painful next time. Next painful, a little less painful. Right? And eventually, you get to a point, and some of these guys, again, guys my age and older, they're running marathons, and they're running it in under 3 hours. And these guys weren't athletes 10 years ago. I can promise you that. And they just train themselves. Runners, they develop this hormone that, I don't know, I've got the term for it. It's runner's hormone, where they actually have this, they have to run. It's like they can't help themselves, they have to run. And it becomes the most natural thing for them. They have this burning desire, this drive to run, that nothing can stop them. And they can run for hours, nonstop. 26 miles, doesn't faze them. Certainly, this same concept applies on the spiritual side. Person is rusty spiritually. Person is rusty in his Gemara skills. So the first time he's going to go out, and it's going to be difficult, maybe even painful. He's going to feel himself grasping for air. I need to get out of this space medrash. I can't breathe. I'm going to die. You know what? Same thing with same thing when you work out. Same thing. It's the same thing. So then you go out again. You go out again, and you run again. You get in the base bench again, and you put another hour. You put another 2 hours, and it's difficult. But it's a little less, and it gets a little less to a point where I don't feel it anymore. The whole morning state went by. I didn't feel it. I can't believe it. It's 11:45 already. Where did the time go? I promise you this will happen to you. I promise you. But you need to go out and run those first times that are painful. And then it becomes natural. And you develop this spiritual hormone that actually makes this drive within you that you can't go a day without putting up a sefer.
It exists.
Just like it exists in the physical world, it exists in the spiritual world. You just need to put in that, get that rust out of you. Because that is the natural state of who we are. That is really who you are. So the answer to the original question is that happiness is the default position of a person. That's where God created us. It's all within our ability. Hasameach lechel tov. You're happy with your lot. Whatever Hashem gives you, you can be happy with. It's up to you. Everything that you need to be happy, you have. The Torah is the natural habitat of the Jew. Torah lifestyle. Eretz Yisrael is the natural habitat of the Jew. You have this year the opportunity to live a year of Kiddusha in the land of Kiddusha, in the holiest city, studying the Torah. There's no place more than you need to be than you. Have a good afternoon. Bosh.